Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Football Social Daily, keeping you up to date with the latest from the English top flight.
Hello and welcome to the Football Social Daily. It may be snowing where you are right now, but that's not going to stop us from talking about the Premier League, which is what we do every single day here on the Football Social Daily. My name's Ant McGinley, and we're coming towards the end of an international break. The last couple of places for the World Cup being assigned tomorrow. The draw will take place for that. USA just managing to crawl through despite losing to Costa Rica. I think they had to lose 6-0 to miss out, but a 2-0 defeat means that they will be going to Qatar. We'll look ahead to the Premier League games and that World Cup draw on tomorrow's show, but today's show we're going to look at a few different issues, including the fact that there's a brand new ball for the World Cup and it's claimed that it's faster in flight than anything before it. I'm assuming that means any other football rather than any plane or animal. Another news, speaking of planes, Manchester United have announced that they will be playing a pre-season friendly that isn't very carbon or environmentally friendly. And we're going to start today with this fact that this long avoided issue of five substitutes is being discussed again today for the Premier League, the only competition that seems to not want them up until now. But I'm not just going to do this on my own. You may have heard them chuckling in the background at my opening piece. Joel Tudor?
Good morning, guys. I was just thinking then, bit of an off topic, but do you not think there should be kind of caps for podcast appearances? Because I should be closing in on at least 50 now.
Would you want an actual cap?
Like a pod cap. I don't know how you would do it. It needs to be like in the design of a bit of like a microphone firm, you know, the foam tops, but like...
I think it's a lovely idea. I do know, though, that when it comes to actual international caps, it used to be that you would get one for every single appearance that you made. Apparently now, I don't know if it's cost or just people aren't as just don't have the room to keep them at home, but they only get the caps at the significant numbers. So like their their 50th. And of course, we've also seen in more recent times with Southgate, when a player comes on for the first time, they'll get an old player into the dressing room with their shirt and present it to them before they go out. In lieu of having a cap, is there anything else that I can offer you, Marley Anderson? Maybe a brew?
Well, I was going to say, if Joel's gone 50 caps, I think I must be touching about 250 now. Because
you must be closing in on that Hall of Fame style, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, I'm wondering where my statue is going to be outside Football Social Daily Towers, because I'm here when no one else can be bothered. Like yesterday, we weren't even meant to be on yesterday, me and Joel, but yeah, Ian and Matt weren't available, so we stood in last minute and just Mr. Reliable. We are just James Milner of podcasting,
the utility players,
podcasting sphere. Yeah.
I would say, Marley, that you are, in terms of, if I was to compare you to a footballer, I would say you're like a Ledley King, or going back further, a Paul McGrath.
My knees work.
You know, having to get injections to be able to play the game. but you are suffering at the moment. You tested positive for COVID, and yet you're still here, despite the medical advice that says you should rest completely rather than continuing to work. We thank you, Marley. That seems to be, and talking about illness and sickness, a good way to bring us into this five substitutes. So that's being discussed again today. It was brought in during COVID times, which we're still in, let's be honest. And yet every major league, in fact, every major competition, because they do it in the FA Cup, have introduced the five substitute rule. But the Premier League has so far refused to implement it. Now, all signs point towards the fact that it is going to come in next season, and this meeting isn't going to rubber stamp it, as far as I know, but it's just to be a precursor to that. It does seem to be working everywhere else we've seen it. They've got it in the Champions League, La Liga, anywhere you can mention, really. Is there any argument you can think of that's going to be put forward to keep it to just three, Joel?
The only argument I can think of is the fact that obviously smaller clubs, or the ones who haven't got as much depth, are clearly going to be at a slight disadvantage, aren't they, compared to the bigger clubs who've got the massive squads. I mean, you just say Manchester City as an example, where their bench is pretty much as good as their starting 11 in terms of like-for-like quality. And then you look for someone like Burnley, and suddenly there's a massive decline of the quality on the substitutes bench. So in a game, of course, if it's Man City against Burnley, City have got the capability to be able to bring on a player who, like, for example, bringing Riyad Mahrez on for Jack Grealish or Bernardo Silva. They're always going to have that extra edge when it comes to this kind of thing. But like we were just discussing prior to the podcast, it's the fact that rarely any manager uses three substitutes these days, let alone five. I think five would only be used if a match went to extra time, or there was just a ridiculous amount of injuries in the game and they had to keep chopping and changing, or you went ultra defensive and you were defending for your life in a final. But apart from that, in a typical Premier League game, you don't really use that many subs, because I remember Jurgen Klopp's been really vocal about it. And it's quite funny how, you know, English football, the FA, Premier League, they always love going against the grain of what every other European league is doing, because they think they know best, especially when it came to a VAR, for example. And then suddenly they realise, oh, actually, the other European leagues are actually doing it right and it works. It's like that English upper lip, isn't it, of just thinking this way is the best way until you realise it actually isn't the best way. And I think it's right, to be honest, just in terms of the fact that it's been so publicised as well, how players are starting to talk out more about how their schedules are so busy and they're getting burnt out and younger players are being overused and that kind of thing. And I think they're trying to take away that narrative a little bit more, of the fact that they're having to be playing probably more games and more intensity and less time to recover, etc., etc. But then the managers have to start taking advantage of it and start using it then, because even when there were five substitutes, I think was it in the time during COVID where they brought it in again, and literally no manager used the five substitutes unless there was just bizarre circumstances. So I think it is a good idea. Of course, it does benefit the better sides, but I mean, regardless, take away the five substitutes rule, the better sides benefit regardless, because they have more money than other clubs and they can buy better players. So they're at an advantage regardless. I think it's a good idea, and it just kind of fits the narrative of just being able to give players more of a break, especially when managers complain about these big congestion periods as well.
Marley, do you think there's an argument here to say that it kind of gives you a get out of jail free card almost if you've got your tactics wrong? And so you can suddenly make, you know, quite a few, suddenly change your whole midfield and one of your defenders and strikers.
I suppose it could, yeah. You know, you've got that scope to change, you know, five subs is half your outfield team. So, you know, there is greater scope to change things if you're getting things wrong, but you've got to have those options on the bench as well. And I think this is the crux of the issue is coming down to the smaller teams in the league not having the depth to to change things as much as one of the top sides. But for me, that's not really an excuse, because every club in the Premier League has the means and the finances to go and buy players. They don't have to run on a really thin squad where, you know, they're struggling to get 20 in a match squad or whatever it is. So I think as long as you give people fair warning, you know, clubs like Burnley and Norwich and Watford and what have you can plan for the five subs and have more depth in their squad. So, you know, obviously there will be higher calibre players turning out for Man City and Liverpool and the top sides, Chelsea and what have you. But, you know, I do think there's enough money flowing around in the Premier League to have, you know, 15, 16 guys that are good enough to start rather than 10 or 11 like some clubs do.
This idea of the clubs not having depth, the smaller clubs not having depth, I mean, no matter how small the club is, they have a reserve team, they have a youth squad as well. And so is this not an opportunity for them to be able to sort of blood those youngsters and give them that experience and add to that ability that they've got? And we've seen, you know, like Jude Bellingham, you know, obviously he's a very unique talent in what he has, but, you know, he was playing at a very high level at 16. He's gone over to the Bundesliga, you know, and he's had those opportunities. Now, when you go to the likes of the bigger clubs, even with those substitutes, he may not have had those substitutes, those same opportunities. And in fact, his old teammate, Jadon Sancho, that was the reason why he left Manchester City, was so he could get that opportunity. So actually, is this a chance, Joel, for those smaller clubs to actually, you know, have maybe not the same depth in talent, but at least in terms of experience in their squads, to bring that to them?
Potentially. I think with the bigger clubs, I guess it leaves them with less reason to actually use the younger players, considering the three subs are usually for, of course, you know, the senior players on the bench. But then let's say, for example, Man City are playing Burnley and they're cruising 4-0 up, and then they're able to use those extra two substitutes to actually bring on, you know, the younger players who would never have got a shot on the pitch had there still been three, then yeah, I could see an argument for that. But like you mentioned with Sancho, and the fact that he was not willing to wait on the bench at age 17 and took the chance to just go to Germany, and it ended up being one of the best decisions. He's probably been the path maker for all the young English players based on that decision, which I think is very like not talked about in terms of how much of an impact that's had. I'm sure Bellingham probably saw that and thought, right, you know what, what's the point of me waiting, even though he was playing regularly for Birmingham. But yeah, I guess it just does allow for more opportunity. But then again, you have to say as well, how much impact can a young player make in 10 minutes? It's got to be a case of being able to play consistently in a position. So I still think that there'll be more and more young players who see that route that Sancho took, and they're not willing to wait anymore until, you know, when they get to 19, 20, 21 and they're still hovering around in the reserves and they're still playing those youth games and they're getting 10 minutes in the FA Cup. For me, it's absolutely pointless. If I was a player now and I was at one of these big clubs like United or Liverpool or Chelsea, and I wasn't getting opportunity by that age, it's just, you have to realise a footballer's career is so relatively short in comparison to a typical career. So there's just no point waiting around, because your prime years go pretty quickly. There's not a long time in your prime. But yeah, hopefully it may encourage, maybe there would be a change in terms of how much youth players you have to have in your bench or in your team potentially. But I do think it may impact the opportunities that the youth players do get. But I just don't, because of how much pressure these managers are under to get results, I just don't see it changing a massive amount, apart from these small cameo appearances that they typically do get at the moment.
Talking about those small cameo appearances, let's not underestimate the power of money here, because you do get a different fee if you're named on the bench, and then an appearance fee if you actually come onto the field of play as well, which, especially as a young player, I imagine can make quite a big difference. Let's flip it on its head a little bit. We've kind of been looking at it, you know, from the youth players, from the young players, and also, you know, being able to the small clubs not necessarily having that same sort of level of depth. If you're a big club and you've got a whole wealth of talented players from around the world who all have egos and demands, which is the direction that Newcastle's heading in, Marley, is five substitutes actually going to be enough? Or do you think we'll be here again in a couple of seasons kind of going, well, it needs to be up to seven, and then we're moving towards a situation where it's almost like you have special teams. You have like a team that plays at home, a team that plays away, and then further down the line, you're moving towards that sort of NFL setup where you're rolling substitutes on and off depending on the corner or the free kick.
I think we're a fair bit away from that. It would be funny though, with as soon as you lose the ball, right, we need to make 11 subs and get all 11 centre backs on the pitch quickly, and then a special penalty taker comes on and
well, that's already happening. Misses that is, a penalty. That is already happening.
Yeah, it's well, that's happening with Kepa, isn't it, in goal, and Mendy coming on to save penalties and what have you. So yeah, I think I'd be up for. Trialing it, just seeing what happens, seeing how teams use it, seeing if we're happy with how teams use it in the upcoming like season, and see how it goes from there. Because I think with five subs as well, if you've used two subs and you're 2-1 up in the 90th minute, people are just going to use it to time waste as well. So it gives a greater scope for that. Even though sometimes you might only have three slots to do the five subs in, so you've got to do at least two double subs at each one. Yeah.
That really confuses me. You know, you can have five substitutes, but you can only do it. I mean, I'm quite good at maths, but that just hurts my head.
It is hard to keep up, to keep track of, because you're like, hang on, we've got four subs available, but we've used one of our slots already, so we've actually only got three available. So it's confusing, but it is there to stop time wasting. Because can you imagine? You know, the 90th minute comes along and the board goes up and then it's like, right, we want to make a sub. And then as soon as they come on the pitch, another sub lines up and it'll just be like going round and round and round. And people, there's a massive opportunity for, I can't say it because you're going to have to bleep it, but I'll call it skullduggery rather than something housery. In that sort of thing, if you do that, so... I'd just trial it and see how teams use it and then go from there, really, because it's all right speculating about, oh, this team will be good with five subs and this team won't, but until you try it, you're never going to know.
Yeah. One thing that would sort of put a stop to the time-wasting thing would be the simple introduction of just a clock and stopping the clock every time the ball went out of play or there was a substitution.
Why don't we do that?
Well, because that's technology, Marley, and we don't want to... That's the technology that couldn't be replicated all the way through. Oh, no, we did it with VR, didn't we? Yeah.
They actually mentioned, you know, with the ball in play, they actually said that we only get about 50 to 60 minutes of actual football. The rest of it is literally goal kicks, throw-ins, time-wasting, substitutes. So, honestly, I would actually be in favour of just having maybe not a 90-minute game, but like 100% getting 70 minutes of football, considering the fact that we literally barely get any football. It's just the fact that we're having to wait constantly during the game because of how much stoppages there are, and they just let it go as well. Like, for example, you know, when a goalkeeper takes a goal kick and he literally places the ball down, does like this whole ritual, and then takes about a minute off the clock. He's like, no one wants to see a goalkeeper just doing that when you're at a stadium. I didn't pay to come watch him do that. I want to see some actual football. So I'd be in favour of these little small areas of the pitch where there's constant time wasting. Just stop the clock.
Oh, you can tell he's a Man United fan, can't you? They're talking about
why
that thing of you never, you know, that whole thing when you're a smaller club and you've managed to somehow eke out a draw or nick a goal, and you're just doing everything you can.
No, but you know how annoying that is, though. That just kills me when I watch it. But even still, even when they do it at the start of the game when it's 0-0, I mean, for what? Can we just watch some football, please? And if you get a goal, you know what? Do everything you want to do. But yeah, I mean, 55 to 60 minutes of play is ridiculous, in my opinion.
Well, we'll make sure we send a transcript of this podcast over to the FA and the Premier League so that they can incorporate that into their discussions, Joel. Let's take a little break there. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about pre-season friendlies that aren't very environmentally friendly. That's next.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily. So we had some great weather last week, and in the UK at the moment, it's suddenly snowing because that's what happens here. So a lot of people are turning their attention to the Easter break that's coming up, and possibly for the first time in a couple of years, to actually having a summer holiday, including Manchester United, who have announced plans to play Crystal Palace. Not at Selhurst Park, not at Old Trafford, but at the 100,000-seater Melbourne Cricket Ground in July. Yes, Manchester United will be travelling to Australia for the first time ever. Now, it's great that fans on the other side of the world will get the opportunity to see their heroes play, but it's not so great in terms of reducing their carbon footprint. Marley, what's the furthest you ever went to see a friendly for your club?
I don't know, maybe like Oldham or something. Not far. I go further to see my team at home because I live in Manchester, so 150-mile drive if I want to see them. So, yeah, probably, yeah, Oldham or something, I think.
I'm not sure we can really do anything about this, but I'm thinking in terms of, like, from the players themselves. Now, the fans that come out, they're going to want to see the big-name players that appear. So they're going to want to see the likes of, well, I was going to say Paul Pogba, but he may very well not be there at this point. But they'll want to see the big name players appearing. But in terms of your preparation, like, we've talked a lot on the show about how players have improved dramatically for their club by retiring from their international commitments so that they're not travelling for sort of 15, 16 hours on a plane one way to play a game and then coming back. Now, I imagine they would be out for a little bit longer, but unless they combine it with a holiday for the players, this doesn't feel like the best kind of pre-season training. That said, Marley, I imagine there's going to be a few fair trips for your squad back and forth to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, we've been to Saudi Arabia and I think we're in... where were we recently? I think it might have been Qatar or something. For the warm weather trips, but yeah, I think with football, you're talking about football clubs' carbon footprint, then you know it doesn't really matter whether you wash your bean tin out and put it in the recycling when Man United are taking a trip to Leicester on a plane or travelling 20 hours around the world to Australia or something like that. It's kind of puts it into perspective. But yeah, it's just one of the things, isn't it? I suppose it's. I think the world we live in now is very sort of skeptical and critical of many things. You know, you can't do something without somebody spotting that. You know, it's not quite good for this person or the environment or, you know, the finances. Is it a suitable use of finances? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Type of thing. But that's football, isn't it? It's a multi-million-pound. Well, almost billion-pound empires. So, you know, there are going to be huge costs which are hard to justify at times. And I think this tour of Australia probably is. I mean, they're playing Crystal Palace twice in Australia. It's Aston Villa twice, which is bizarre, really. But Yeah, it's not the first strange decision ever made by Man United, so it's and it won't be the last friendly, weird friendly we've ever seen either.
Our resident expert on terms of bizarre decisions that Manchester United have made is Joel Tudor. But let's look at some of the positives of this as well, because in a sense, it gives them the opportunity to not only create a commercial presence in a new territory, if I can say that sounding very business speak like, but it also gives them an opportunity to scout local talent, and also for the leagues that they go to and the players in those leagues to put themselves in the window, but also to sort of give themselves a benchmark for where they are in terms of their actual quality.
Yeah, I mean, the last time all the clubs did it seems like a long time ago that these pre-season friendlies happened after COVID. The last one was obviously in 2019, and after that it's been pretty much nothing, hasn't it? So, yeah, of course it's important for the brand, the commercial aspects, blah, 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 blah. But actually, I have a few friends who live in Australia and they're from Manchester, and they wish that United would just come over and do a game, because it's like the only games they can ever watch live. So I guess for that aspect is a good part of the whole tour. But we played Crystal Palace twice in two different cities, which is quite a strange one. I've never seen that happen before with the same side. I guess it's important as well just for the fans in the other side of the country, because it's like on the other side of the world, sorry, because it's just the only opportunity that they may ever get to be able to watch their team in their country. So yeah, I do think it's good. I think the furthest I've ever travelled for a friendly was, well, it's not even United, because obviously they're always on the other side of the world for it, but it was England against, I think, Jamaica in 2006 at Old Trafford, just prior to the World Cup. It was when Crouchy pulled out his robot again. and I was like, oh my God, this guy's like, he's like my Romario in those days. I was thinking, this guy the best striker in the world at the moment, because he was on fire then. I remember watching him just banging in the Stretford end and thinking, God, this guy is my hero. I was only like 10 at the time.
Marley's in charge of all our social media here. Do you think if Joel was to do it, you could tweet out a video of Joel doing the robot?
I've already got one. He doesn't know it yet, but when Joel's had a few drinks, you can't stop him getting the robot out. Jesus.
Pull out the rope.
Yeah, so that game is taking place in July. United heading over there. And actually, you know, as Joel reminds us there, we have had sort of 2 years where none of this has happened. But we only have to go back, was it 4 seasons ago, when Man United and Man City met in China. As it turned out, that game was actually rained off, and the rained off more rain than we'd ever seen in Manchester meant that game didn't happen. But this thing has slowly been moving towards, and we've also seen lots of one-time trophies and cups have been put around, which is good, because it means clubs like Spurs can actually win something as well.
What was it? What was it? The trophy that they won? Was it the Audi Cup?
The Audi Cup. Yeah.
that's become just a meme now, hasn't it? Because that's the only trophy that Harry Kane has literally held in his 15-year career, which he's desperate, isn't he, to remove that Audi Cup from his from his trophy cabinet.
I mean, I would imagine as well that, you know, given the talent that he's got, he had quite a big trophy cabinet made, and that's just sat in there looking ever so lonely. Hopefully things will change for him in the next couple of seasons, but that's just the way football is. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk balls, or rather a specific brand new one.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Football Social Daily. I was going to say the part three. The third part. That's where I should have gone. The third chapter of today's Football Social Daily. I'm Ant McGinley, and joining me, Joe Tudor, Marley Anderson, and we're talking balls because there is a brand new ball for the World Cup, and it's claimed that it's faster in flight than any ball before. There's some nice graphics coming out about the different balls they've had for World Cups, going back to France 98. I saw one this morning, and it does evoke memories of the tournaments. And of course, we're used to having different balls in different Premier League seasons as well. Do you notice the difference? Just from, like, we're not professional sports people here, but we occasionally have a kick about. We've all had the opportunity. Somebody turns up and they go, oh, they've got the new Premier League ball. Do you yourselves notice the difference when you knock these things about? And in terms of the excitement and the technology that's going into it, you know, we occasionally hear the players complaining about the movement of the ball and what it does. But is this... Do you think there is actually an evolution going on here? Or once they switched from like the old heavy leather ones that soaked up the water to the kind of composites that we have now, do you think it's very much of a muchness?
It's whenever there's a new ball released, it always makes me laugh. the copyright on it, you know, the copy they release with it. And they have to, you know, how do you talk about a ball? Like, you know, how do you make a ball sound exciting? It's like, it's the roundest ever, or it's the fastest in flight ever. Now, I'm sure there is a technical way of measuring it in flight. Like, I'm sure they're not lying. However, for me, like, a ball travels faster in flight if you kick it faster. Like, surely, if I kick a ball at 60 mile an hour and you kick a ball at 40 mile an hour, my ball travels through the air faster than your ball. But I know it's probably like how it shapes in the air and what have you, but you know, football fans aren't interested, and you know, nobody really cares, do they? They care about what it looks like and possibly the price tag. Like, if you've got kids who are going to say, you know, I want the new Premier League ball, and you look at the price tag and you go, piss off, son, it's 78 quid. you know, that's an issue. But yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? Like, oh, it's the roundest ever, and it's like... The only people it ever affects, really, is the goalkeepers. And even the goalkeepers can you know, stretch the truth a bit. Like, oh, the ball wobbled in the air. And it's not, you just didn't get your feet set right, and you flapped at it thinking you were going to save it easily. But it's all just like a ready-made excuse. But as for the new World Cup one, it does look pretty good, to be fair. But it'll never beat the clamour that was surrounding the 2002 World Cup ball, the FIFA Nova, which was the first one that captured the imagination of people, and everyone wanted that ball. It was that was the first proper one where I think a ball became a bit of a statement and its own thing in itself type of thing. So it's a long way to go to get that, because we get them too often now.
First of all, I'd just like to remind Joel that he's not got long to get his nomination in for Marley to be Dad of the Year. you often hear stories as well, and I'm pretty sure it was about Cristiano Ronaldo, about when these new balls have come out and been released, that he would actually go down to Nike or Adidas, whoever sort of was the particular sponsor for that tournament, and he would spend a day with 40 or 50 balls just kicking them and getting to know them and work out how they move and how they fly. Now, is this pure conjecture and myth building and rumor, or, you know, with what we know of Ronaldo, is that something that's, he probably does that every other week?
I actually have a bit of insight into this, because I went to the Adidas HQ in Germany. It's near Nuremberg in Bavaria. And my uncle used to work at the Adidas HQ, so he took me around for a little guided tour. And if you both remember the Jabulani back in 2010, where that was just knuckleballing everywhere. He used to work with one of the designers in the team that designed it. And he was saying how they did not intend for it to have that much flight. Like, they were quite shocked when it came to the World Cup of just how much it was moving. But that's to say test it for years. I mean, years and years after the designs and the shape of it, they apparently they made it too round, which caused it to be way too wavy and erratic in the air. If you remember Diego Forlan, he scored some absolute crackers in that World Cup purely because the ball would just move about 10 times before it would get to the goalkeeper. But they do test it ridiculous amounts. I remember when I was there and the Bayern Munich youth team turned up to test the new latest balls that were going to be used in the Bundesliga for that season. So it's not like they just kind of design it and then say, okay, that's your ball for the tournament. There's a hell of a lot that goes into it. It's ridiculously technical. But the Jabalani for me is one that will always be the most iconic one, just because obviously it was the first World Cup that was hosted in Africa. There was just a nice vibe around it and the colours were great on the ball. But also when I bought one myself back in 2010, every single pass would just turn into a knuckleball where you wouldn't even need to put that much effort onto it and it would literally just fly. It would make your goals look absolutely outstanding, like needless to say. You could just put a little bit of a lift on it and the keeper would be dancing like he was getting, like he was Bambi on ice. He was just everywhere. And I used to love it, honestly. It's my favourite ball by an absolute mile.
Oh, man. That's my least favourite, that. Really? Yeah, just mainly for the same reason. And also because it just reminds me of that World Cup, and I think that was the worst World Cup as well.
The quality of it was poor, wasn't it? The games were very, very slow and stale. There weren't many games that were like, you know, crazy goal score lines. But to be fair, there were some absolute crackers of goals in that. I remember the Giovanni Van Bronckhorst goal when Holland, I think, were they playing Portugal? And he literally just hammered it from about 40 yards on the left touchline. And I swear to God, it was like someone was holding the ball and just floating it over the keeper. It moved that much. But the design team did not intend for that to be the case. And after it, they've never used the similar design to that ever again, just because of how much the goalkeepers complained about the flight of it. So that's like been tucked into the archives now, just on display. They won't ever touch it again just because it was so controversial.
Is there anything you'd like to see them introduce to football designs? Like, for example, just thinking about it there, that the South Africa World Cup was also famous for the vuvuzelas.
Oh,
and I think they maybe missed a trick in maybe making the ball sound like a vuvuzela while it was in flight.
I mean, do you really need any more vuvuzela sounds when you have the whole stadium completely going at it for like 90 minutes straight? I mean, I think the players would just be the most irritated out of anyone in the stadium. But yeah, I mean, what more can you do with a ball, to be honest, apart from maybe put like a chip in it to monitor, I don't know, if your players are actually kicking the ball hard enough or working hard enough. I don't really know what more you can do with it, but there is some crazy technology that goes into these balls, even though they are just a ball on face value. I mean, you know, when was it the Tango balls that they used to use prior to 2002? Was that the name of them? Where they had all of the panels, the stitched panels?
Yeah, was it like a triangular design?
Yeah, and then the 2006 World Cup, that was the first time they used a bonded ball where they used no stitching whatsoever, and it kind of just changed the game for everything in terms of, like, they didn't soak up any water at all. They didn't absolutely make a scar on your face if they slapped you in the face with all those stitching. I think you both know about that one. I've had too many stingers with those stitched ones. So at least the bonded ones are nice.
Nothing quite like a fully pumped up Mitre Delta hitting you on the back of the legs.
Oh my God, I think I still have Mitre like etched onto the back of me with how many times it used to just absolutely rip into your skin. But these newer ones, yeah, I think they're a bit more easier to play with. But my God, those old stitched ones, even when you look at the ones that they used to use like in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, you know, the brown ones, where they were literally just a massive pouch of leather with the hugest stitched in it, like it was stitching a head together. I mean, how the hell did they play with that?
Madness, innit? As soon as he got wet as well, I think they'd weigh about 5 kilos, so you'd have to have neck muscles like the size of your calf muscles to knock them in. Crossing in the header, you've got a risk of broken neck if you catch it wrong.
You'd be backing away, wouldn't you, if a cross came in?
I've got to give a shout out to my favourite ball, and actually this is one that wasn't used in a World Cup or indeed any tournament, but became very famous thanks to a certain Mr. Eric Cantona in an advert for Nike, the cage advert. I don't know if you remember
that.
You've come
across
it on
one.
YouTube. The chrome ball, yeah.
Was that the one with the scorpion on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is the scorpion ball.
Yeah.
And I picked mine up for a tenner. I've just had a look now because I had a bit of nostalgia. I thought, I'll see if I can get one. Found one on eBay for £4,999 in perfect condition.
Yeah, all of the, you know, all of these old balls, even the Jabalani ones, the original ones, because they're so hard sought after, I think they were selling for like £600 each.
Wow.
Well, there you go. There's the lesson we've had this morning. Don't invest in Bitcoin. Invest in World Cup footballs. Yeah. Well, we shall put all talk of balls and indeed all talk of the podcast aside for now, and we will return tomorrow. Just leaves me to say thank you very much to Joel Tudor.
Thank you, guys. I hope you all enjoyed our discussion of balls in this beautiful morning.
And the much more mature, and I'm sure he won't say anything at all about it, Marley Anderson.
Yeah, thank you. I'm off to Google how to get one of those scorpion balls. I'll bring one into the office next week and whack it out.
We'll recreate.
Whack it out at the Christmas party or something. Smack it around the dance floor. I'll be decent. But yeah, let's. Well, can anyone tell that we haven't got much to talk about in the international break? Because I think we've hit it pretty well.
It's like getting blood from a stone.
More importantly, can anyone tell which ease that Marley just talked about picking up a £5,000 ball and just bringing it for a kickabout? Obviously, he's been paid far too much.
Yeah, Jim will testify to that one, yeah, but he's wrong.
That's it for now. Please remember to come back tomorrow for another episode. And if you give us a follow, that will automatically pop up. And do remember to leave us a review as well. Thanks very much.